Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Tesla Q3 2020 Financial Results and Q&A webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker, Mr. Martin Viecha, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sherry, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Tesla's third quarter 2020 Q&A webcast. I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Zachary Kirkhorn, and a number of other executives. Our Q3 results were announced at about 1:00 P.M. Pacific Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question-and-answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please press star one now if you would like to join the question queue. But before we jump into the Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thanks, Martin. All right, so Q3 was our best quarter in history. We achieved record production and deliveries, record revenue, record net income, both GAAP and non-GAAP, and record free cash flow of $1.4 billion. This is really due to the amazing execution by the Tesla team. I could not be more proud to work with such a great group of people. Just really kick-ass performance across throughout the world. Of course, we had Battery Day, so we hosted, showed our plans for how we can expand the future and improve core battery technology, core cell technology at the form factor level, chemistry level, and I think more significantly at the manufacturing technology level. Something a comment I've made in the past is that I think Tesla's long-term competitive strength will be primarily manufacturing. This is counterintuitive, but I'm quite confident this will be what happens. Anyway, so we presented what the team's been working on for a long time, well, batteries. We wanted to step back and really rethink batteries from scratch, first-principle thinking, just look at the fundamental physics and say what, rather than compare to other products in the market, just say from a physics standpoint, if what's the limit of physics? What's the platonic ideal of a perfect cell, and how close can we get there? And that was our aspiration, and I think we've got a pretty good approach to it, which will only get better over time. So we went through all of the engineering solutions for every important part of battery design and production, and we'll continue to iterate on that and just recursively improve the core cell and battery technology. The result, we think, in a few years will be batteries that cost half as much and where the capital expenditures required are a third or less of what they are today. And we expect Giga Berlin will see our first battery cell production line at scale. Regarding the Full Self-Driving beta release, the Autopilot team, again, just a really all-star team. I spent a lot of time with the Autopilot team, and there's just a lot of really talented people on that team who've worked incredibly hard to get the beta release out. So I'd just really like to thank them for their hard work, and it's just a very smart group of people. So I think we're starting very slow and just very cautiously because the world is a complex and messy place. And so we put it out there last night, and then we'll see how it goes and then probably release it to more people this weekend or early next week, and then just gradually step it up until we have hopefully a wide release by the end of this year. And of course, as the system collects more data and it becomes more robust. So it's sort of like, how does Google as a search engine get better? It's because everyone is programming it by asking it questions all the time and clicking on particular links. So it's got this great feedback loop. And that makes it an extremely effective search engine. It's the same thing for autonomy. Having on the order of 1 million cars that are providing feedback and specifically feedback on strange corner case situations that you just can't even come up with in simulation. This is the thing that is really valuable. It's not like the obvious stuff. The obvious stuff you can do in simulation. But weird corner cases, only reality can give you that. So that's, but we're able to say, okay, we need to train a situation and look for examples so we can then train against those examples and improve some very esoteric corner case. Also important to emphasize that this is a generalized neural net-based approach. There is no need for high-definition maps or a cell phone connection. So the system is designed such that even if you have no connectivity whatsoever and you're in a place that you have never been to before and no Tesla has ever been there, the car should still be able to drive, just like a person. That is the system that we are developing and aiming to release this year. Then in terms of capacity build-out, we're making progress on three major factories. We're continuing to expand Shanghai significantly, which is going incredibly well. The Tesla China team is just, incredibly good. Super smart, work hard. It's like I'm always amazed by how much progress the Tesla China team makes. It's beyond all reasonable expectations. And then we're under construction in Berlin and Texas and Austin. So also making good progress there. It's great. It's overall going well. I should make a point that for Berlin and Austin, we do expect to start delivering cars from those factories next year. But because of the exponential nature of the spool up of a manufacturing plant, especially one with new technology, it will start off very slow at first, and then become very the output will become very large. Just in general, manufacturing follows the S curve, and I think sometimes people, if they haven't spent a lot of time manufacturing, kind of think that once you have a factory, you can just sort of turn it on and it's at capacity. But it will typically take about 12 to 18 months to reach capacity. And that is a very fast period of time, especially for new technology. I'd say 12 to 24 months even. Generally what I see is the manufacturing capacity is underestimated in the beginning for quite some time. Then it's sometimes overestimated because this is an S-curve. It goes exponential to linear to logarithmic. It's actually an incredibly hard thing just bringing a production plant to volume technology. Because you can actually think of it like you've got two first order approximation, 10,000 unique parts or processes, all of which operate on an S-curve with a bunch of uncertainty. And you can just slide 10,000 S-curves on an X-axis, and that's what bringing up a large automotive plant is like. And which one's the laggard, which one's the leader, it's very difficult to tell, and it's constantly changing. It's really one of the most difficult challenges I've ever seen. In conclusion, thank you. All we've achieved would not be possible without the incredible hard work of tens of thousands of Tesla employees and all the people at our suppliers as well. I'd like to thank our suppliers. We continue to grow as fast as we can while focusing on cost control and improving quality. And ultimately, the best company will be that which makes great products at an affordable price, and that is our goal. I think I've never felt more optimistic about the future of Tesla than I do today. I'd also like to thank investors who have stuck with us through thick and thin. I think there's a lot more good stuff to come. All right, with that, we can move to questions.
Thank you, Elon. I think our CFO, Zachary Kirkhorn, has some opening remarks as well.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. Overall, our financial health continues to rapidly improve, with Q3 being another great quarter on nearly all dimensions, as Elon has mentioned. On net income, we achieved our fifth sequential quarter of profitability, our best net income, and nearly double-digit operating margins. Two things that are important to note to set context for Q3 profitability. First, the regulatory credits business was stronger than our expectations, and we are tracking to more than double this year compared to last. Second, as a result in the rise of the market cap of the company, the second and third tranche of the CEO grant vested during the quarter. Additionally, we have begun expensing one more tranche, resulting in roughly $300 million of combined period expense. I think it's reasonable to view the quarter excluding both these items to get a true sense of the health of the core business. On automotive gross margin, excluding regulatory credits, it increased materially from 18.7% to 23.7%, with some of our programs achieving greater than 25% gross margin. Keep in mind that inefficiencies related to factory shutdowns affected our margins in Q2. We continue to reduce our manufacturing and operational costs. We are also seeing benefits from the ongoing upward trend of locally built and delivered cars, which has increased from under 50% at the beginning of last year to over 70% most recently, which is a core component of our cost reduction strategy. We are also seeing financial benefits from improved vehicle reliability across the fleet. Services and other margin improved yet again, driven by our used vehicle business and efficiencies in our service operations. In the energy business, we achieved record storage deployments, aided by the positive reception of the Megapack and Powerwall products as production and deployments grow. Additionally, our solar deployments doubled, and we're continuing to make progress on that front. On cash flows, our cash balance increased to $14.5 billion, which includes free cash flows of $1.4 billion, our highest yet. Our operating cash flows were $2.4 billion, including a $600 million benefit from working capital, as we've made progress on days of receivables and inventory, despite a reduction in days of payables. Note that the majority of our operating cash flows are driven by the strengthening of our core operations. Capital expenses grew to $1 billion, driven by Model Y investments in Shanghai, Berlin, and Austin. As for previous investments in Model 3 Shanghai and Model Y in Fremont, we are expecting these programs to have already fully paid for their respective investments by the end of this year. Looking forward to 2021 and 2022, we have revised up our expectations for capital spending by $2 to $2.5 billion, which we have ample liquidity and expected cash flows to fund. This is driven by an increase in in-source scope for certain factories, including battery cell manufacturing, as well as investments to enable greater capacity expansion in the future. While we expect the return on our investments to remain very strong, keep in mind that with additional scope and location-specific costs, the payback of these investments may be slightly longer than what we saw in Model 3 in Shanghai and Model Y in Fremont. Financing cash flows were $4.5 billion as we reduced use of our working capital lines, offset by a $5 billion equity raise in September. Note that we're currently expecting over $1 billion in early convert paydowns in Q4, primarily associated with the 2021 conversions, but also our 2022 and 2024s. Looking forward, we remain focused on strengthening the core fundamentals of the business. We are increasing production to meet demand, reducing costs, including localization, driving higher efficiency across the business, and tightening our cash conversion cycle. We've made tremendous progress on this front over the last year and a half. We're also aiming to achieve our original 2020 guidance of 500,000 deliveries, despite the operational interruptions earlier in the year. While this goal remains a genuine challenge, we believe it's possible with tight execution across the company. So congratulations again to the Tesla team for a great quarter and a great year. I'll hand it over to RJ Johnson, who joined Tesla earlier in the year and is leading our energy business, for a few comments.
Thank you, Zach. First, I'd like to also thank and congratulate the team on a job well done. Q3 was a strong quarter for the energy business, and we're poised for continued strong growth in energy storage and solar. Megapack is going to be a large growth segment for the business, and deployments will continue to expand rapidly as the product reaches full capacity. We have more demand than supply through 2021, and we continue to ramp the product to match unprecedented demand across the globe through 2023 and beyond. Our order book is rapidly filling up through 2023 in the multiple gigawatt hour scale. Large-scale solar plus storage is now more cost-effective than traditional fossil fuel generation in many locations across the globe. This trend will continue as we remove costs, which will further displace existing and new fossil fuel generation. This is true for standalone storage as well. Many customers are utilizing AutoBidder to maximize returns as we optimize our hardware and software with advanced real-time bidding strategies that continue to outperform the market where deployed. For Powerwall, we see continued strong demand for residential storage as customers seek increased reliability and backup home generation. We have a very large backlog of Powerwall orders, and we continue to invest to increase capacity to fulfill customer orders. We're just now capturing the full power of customer-sided solar plus storage as customers in some jurisdictions are providing services back to the grid when they don't need to consume energy or have backup power. This has massive potential to reduce system costs and make the grid more efficient globally. In the United States, we lowered our residential solar retrofit price to $1.49 a watt after tax incentives, which is the lowest in the industry. We're able to do this by leveraging our online vehicle ordering infrastructure, which substantially reduces soft costs associated with sales and marketing. As a result, our fixed costs remain relatively flat as our volume and efficiency increase, leading to increased profitability in the retrofit business. We're using the same methodology across the entire energy business, including service, to capitalize on the technology backbone of the company. Solar roof is especially exciting as we've gained significant experience over the last year in the installation process, which is a key enabler to scale the business. We've recently demonstrated our ability to complete solar roof installation in just one day. Please note, this still requires 1 to 2 days to remove the existing roof and prepare it for the solar roof installation. Clearly, there will be a range of installation times based on size, complexity, weather, and other factors. Overall, our reduced installation time provides a better customer experience and will enable the business to grow exponentially as scale effects allow for increased efficiency. In closing, we believe the energy segment is poised for a strong growth as we continue to focus on increasing scale while reducing cost to maximize profitability. I want to thank the team again for their hard work, and I look forward to another strong quarter ahead of us.
Thank you very much, everyone. And let's begin with questions from Set.com. The first question from retail shareholders is Tesla planning to start 4680 cell production at Giga Berlin at the same time as vehicle production? Can Tesla share more information on what products will use the battery cells from the pilot line in Fremont?
Drew, do you want to take that?
Sure. We will incorporate 4680 design solutions into many applications in time across both energy and vehicle, and we can use our pilot production facility in Fremont to support the new factory in Berlin as it ramps.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the next question, which is question number two from retail shareholders. Does Tesla's tabless cell design allow for significantly higher peak charging rates? Does it improve the required taper curve?
Yeah. The fundamental limitation on charge rate in lithium-ion batteries is avoiding lithium plating on the anode. And while the tabless architecture helps avoid overheating because it's a more power-dense architecture at high continuous charge rates, it doesn't change the anode plating story. Electrode design and anode material choice more directly determines the maximum charge rate and how to avoid that lithium plating problem.
Okay. Thank you very much. The third question from retail is, would FSD be able to be transferred to our next vehicle or pay a transfer fee? It would add to a brand loyalty. The same way gaming companies and cell phone companies keep you in their ecosystem by letting you transfer purchases to upgraded hardware.
I think we'll give it some thought.
Okay. The fourth question is, what are the remaining constraints to be solved for solar roof installations to ramp significantly? Carl?
Yeah, this is Carl Peterson. I'm on the solar roof engineering and installation. The biggest constraint right now on solar roof ramp is getting enough installers on board and trained and experienced. We've made a lot of progress on this in Q3, and we're continuing to hire. The next opportunity is improving the material flow on the job site. We've talked about this a lot in the factory as well, that setting up the right packaging, kitting, so that every installer on the roof has the parts they need at their fingertips. Also, we've had great response from third-party roofing contractors as they're ramping up installations for Solar Roof on their customer homes, which is a big source of future growth.
Thank you, Carl.
Yeah. Now, I mean, here's a way to think about a product, in my opinion. You have to say, I think, what do you want the world to look like? When you look around the neighborhood, the future, decade from now, you know, what do you want? What products are going to make your life better? What future do you want? And I think a future where we've got beautiful roofs with generating energy that are tough and resilient and better in every way than a regular roof and alive with energy, that's the future we want. The Solar Roof is a killer product. This will become obvious next year.
Thank you. And the last question from retail shareholders is, you recently referred to Tesla as a conglomerate of startups. Other than manufacturing electric cars, what do you suppose will be the most valuable business units within Tesla over the next 5 to 7 years? Could you envision any of them ever spinning out from Tesla?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this today. I mean, Tesla is probably, there's probably in excess of a dozen startups effectively in Tesla. Every major product line is a startup. Every new plant is a startup. And sometimes, frankly, we have to learn the lesson a few times before it sinks in. Even things like service and sales are startups. Other car companies, OEMs, they don't own their sales and service. So we have to create our service network. We have to create our sales and delivery network. We have to do this in, I don't know, 40 countries, multiple languages. Something that people don't really even know much about is our internal applications team that writes the core technology that runs the company. We are not dependent on enterprise software. Like, for those who understand what this means, this is a very big deal. And my hat is off to the great work of the internal applications team. They write the nervous system, the operating system of the company, the Tesla operating system. Extremely fundamental. Obviously, insurance is substantial. So insurance could very well be, I don't know, 30-40% of the value of the car business, frankly. And as we've talked about before, with a much better feedback loop, instead of it being statistical, it can be specific. Now, obviously, somebody does not have to choose our insurance, but I think a lot of people will. It's going to cost less and be better, so why wouldn't you? Then the whole autonomy thing is a startup. The computer chip was designing our own computer chips was a startup. Obviously, cells are a startup. Designing and making our own power electronics for the drive units, designing, manufacturing our own motors, chargers, the supercharger network is a startup. The thing I think that people just don't really understand about Tesla is that it's a whole chain of startups. And they're like, well, you didn't do that before. Yeah, but we're doing it now. And I think so far we have not, we've maybe been a bit slow with some of the startups, but I don't think we've had any of them fail. So far, so good. No plans to spin anything out. That just sounds like added complexity.
Thank you very much. Let's go to institutional investor questions. The question number one is, as a bridge to the ride-hailing network, could you leverage the insurance product to give customers the ability to rent out their vehicles via the app
thereby enabling the car to make money for them. So basically proprietary version of Turo.
I think we're going to focus on enabling the robotaxi system. So you can just basically, like that's really quite a small subset of the overall robotaxi or robocar thing, where you can have the car be autonomous for you. You can have the car be, shared with friends and family. You can add or remove it from the network. You can have it be entirely in the network. I mean, if you're an Uber or Lyft driver, you could be managing, a fleet of 10 cars. This sort of seems like a, shepherd tending the flock type of thing. It's like you just get way more leverage. I think that's sort of a, we could do that, and it wouldn't be very difficult. But we're going to just be focused on just having an autonomous network, that has sort of elements of Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb.
Thank you. And the second question from institutionals is, residential energy use accounts for roughly the same magnitude of carbon emissions as road transport. Today's boilers and aircon units are profoundly unsexy. Could you elaborate on hints that HVAC advances with the Y could also find use in a domestic system?
Go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say, I think one of the things we focused on with the Model Y and now Model 3 heat pump system was learning how to build a tightly integrated system capable of moving heat to and from anywhere, really, powertrain, battery, cabin, the environment, in outside ambient temperatures all the way down to like negative 20 C, so 30 C. And that's definitely applicable to the home's needs of heating and cooling the home and the water in your house. So certainly applicable. Elon?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like the heat, for the heat pump in the car, being able to use the battery as both a thermal and an electric energy reservoir is very significant. Same thing could be applied to a home with the water heater, and the battery pack itself, of course. I think there's potential for an integrated home system that kind of does power generation, storage, heat and cooling, air filtration, water purification in a really tight package. We don't actually have like a prototype or anything, but I think conceptually that is something that would be probably good to have.
Thank you. The third question from institutionals is, if meeting your long-term volume targets requires price reductions that preclude you from achieving your low double-digit stated margin targets for the autos business, will you still reduce prices accordingly?
We want to make our cars more affordable, and it's always important to separate out affordability from value for money. If the car is too expensive or any given product is too expensive, and people don't have enough money in their bank account, they simply can't buy it, no matter what the value proposition is. So it is important to lower the prices in order to such that people can literally just have enough money to buy it. I do not think we lack for desire for our product, but we do lack for affordability. And so we have to improve the affordability of our products so they are not out of reach of people. We want to bring them more in reach over time, but also improve our cost of production. Obviously, we get hopefully a little bit better every year, sometimes a lot better. And in terms of margins, all of these margins are going to look pretty comically small when you factor in autonomy.
Yeah, two things I'll add to that. Without a doubt, we're moving forward to push as much volume as we reasonably can. So Elon talked to earlier kind of how the S-curve and the timeline of incremental factories looks like. And so we're moving full speed ahead with as much volume as we can reasonably move forward with. The second comment I'd make is if you just look at the journey of the company over the last year and a half, we have grown volumes and grown gross margins despite a number of price reductions over that period of time, and we've kept OPEX fairly stable during that period of time as well. And so the key is what Elon mentions here. I mean, we have to improve the affordability of the vehicle. We have to also continue to make progress improving the cost structure of not only COGS, but of OPEX, which we've demonstrated over the last year and a half, I think quite successfully, and improve the value of the vehicles at the same time. So in addition to reducing the cost of the car, we're making the cars better. And that's the formula to sell the volume. That's what we're focused on.
Thank you very much. The fourth question from institutionals is, at what point do you expect to have enough internal or external battery capacity to start ramping up stationary storage deployments again?
Yeah, we're ramping up stationary storage a lot. So, I mean, it's approximately doubling. We expect it to approximately double next year. So that's pretty good. Hopefully we can accelerate that in years to come.
And approximately doubling it this year too. So the growth.
I mean, if you just keep doubling things, pretty soon you hit the mass of the universe, and we'll need to start, you know, turning Jupiter into cells.
And the last question from institutionals is, manufacturing is hard, delays happen. What contingencies do you have in place to ensure that bottlenecks that you might encounter while ramping internal cell production will not preclude you from your ability to hit your Model Y production volume targets in Berlin and Texas?
Yeah, so I think it's we've tried to de-risk 2021 so that there's almost no dependency on our internal cell production. It's very, very small. The internal cell production will help us ramp in 22, but we're not dependent on it for 21.
And to de-risk the manufacturing system itself, that was one of the reasons why we located our pilot production facility here in Fremont, so we can rapidly iterate on manufacturing scale-up challenges, provide rapid feedback to the design of both the product and the equipment.
Yeah, and our pilot line is pretty big as pilot lines go. It's it would be in the top 10 cell factories on Earth, I believe.
Yeah, that is true.
Our subscale one, yeah. So.
Thank you very much. And now we can go to questions from analysts online. Cherie?
Thank you. Again, we remind you to please ask one question and one follow-up question. Our first question will come from Rod Lache with Wolfe Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Just wanted to ask about the targets from your battery day. Looked like you could be approaching something like 20 million vehicles by 2030 if you hit those goals. Could you maybe share with us a little bit more of a midterm target, like where would you be by 2025, and maybe give us a little bit more insight into the investment required to get there, just to put that extra $2 to $2.5 billion per year into context.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tricky thing with trying to predict things midway through an exponential is that if things are doubling every year or even just growing 50%, then if you shift one, you know, plus minus 1 year, it has a huge effect on the number. So then it sounds like, wow, you either massively exceeded or massively undershot. But it's actually what's going on is a giant S curve. So a whole bunch of pretty big S curves that integrate into a gigantic S curve. So that's why it's difficult to predict the middle. And I'm not saying for sure we'd hit 20 million vehicles. But it does seem like a good goal to have, because that would mean that we're replacing 1% of the global fleet per year. And it's difficult to say that we're, you know, are we really changing the world if we're not switching out 1% of the global fossil fuel vehicles? I mean, I'm not sure that we can make that argument unless we change at least 1% of the vehicles per year. So that's where the 20 million vehicles per year comes from. It's like 1% of 2 billion vehicles, which is the global fleet currently. The global fleet is growing, so probably be a bit bigger in the future. So, you know, it's hard to say. It's like, I don't know, map an S-curve to a $20 million vehicle target in 2030 and move the slider around and see what that number looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That will give you about as much insight as we have.
Okay. And just secondly, you know, if solid-state lithium metal were to become viable, could you just maybe just pass along your perspective on that, and would you be able to repurpose most of what you're putting into place for changes in technology?
Yeah, I mean, answering the first part, the cell production system is fairly agnostic on anode, cathode, electrolyte, separate, that kind of thing. It's we could change, and we will change, and upgrade the all aspects of the cell. And we could, for example, make iron phosphate or nickel manganese or something like that. It's quite adaptable. So I wouldn't say it's not too much to worry about. The lithium, like a pure lithium anode, is maybe not. It's not as great as it may sound. But volumetrically, you're not gaining all that much. Because if you've got nothing on the, so say on the anode side, and you've got and just played out lithium, it's got to go somewhere. So you got to have room for it.
Lithium is less volumetrically dense in the pure metal form than it is in percolated into silicon. So it's kind of hard to understand, but that's the truth. And then as we showed in our presentation, the total anode cost that we're talking about is only a dollar or two per kilowatt hour. So the value of like removing the anode material isn't super high either. So yes, I totally agree, Elon.
Yeah, exactly. But if it should turn out that a pure lithium anode is the right move, that would be no problem.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question will come from Colin Rusch with Oppenheimer. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, guys. You're talking about insourcing a number of processes. Can you talk a little bit about which processes you're moving in-house and the equipment that you're planning to make yourself versus some of the equipment that you'd be buying from other folks?
Sorry, are you talking about the for cell manufacturing or something? Or
manufacturing for sure, as well as on the molds that you've talked about. But you know, in terms of the CapEx budget that you mentioned earlier, talking about the number of processes coming in-house and which equipment pieces you're planning to make yourself versus buying.
Okay, well, I mean, Tesla is absurdly vertically integrated compared to other auto companies or basically almost any company. We have a massive amount of internal manufacturing technology that we build ourselves. We literally make the machine. In fact, we design, so like, okay, what is the thing we want to make? Design the machine that will make that thing. Then we make the machine. This is what this makes it quite difficult to copy Tesla, which we're not actually all that opposed to people copying us, but it's quite difficult because you can't do catalog engineering. You can't just, I'll pick up the supplier catalog, I'll get one of this machine, one of that machine, bingo, now I'm Tesla. There is no catalog. So we made the machine that made the machine that made the machine. we don't want to get carried away here, but, and quite frankly, we would like to outsource less. That would be great. Because then if we could take something that we're doing and outsource it, then we could take those people and we could have them do something else. It's like we just make a crazy amount of machinery internally. This is possibly not well understood. If you just walk around the factory, you can get a sense for it. I don't know if this is like a smart move, but I just know, like, hey, if we're trying to make progress and nobody's got the machine that we need, we got to make it. So we do.
Okay, and then the second question is really around, you know, the balance sheet has really changed. You guys have run awfully lean, and you've got a lot more cushion at this point. You know, and obviously there's opportunities around insurance to drive out some of the cost of ownership as well as financials. You know, how are you guys thinking about that as you move into trying to accelerate demand a little bit and your ability to leverage your access to capital and enable some of those other products? Is that changing from where you've been in the past?
Yeah, I mean, something like insurance is a good example of a product that's basically made by our internal applications team. So we made the insurance product and connect it to the car, look at the data, calculate the risk. This is all internally, basically an internal software application. It's pretty low capital, but has very high return. I don't know. We're trying to spend money at the fastest rate that we can possibly spend it and not waste it. That's our current plan. And so it's quite hard to spend money without wasting it. We're like really just trying to not waste too much of it, frankly. We will certainly waste some of it, but trying to not waste too much of it, this is very difficult. But otherwise, we just try to spend money as quickly as possible in a way that is sensible and yields more value than it costs.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Adam Jonas with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hey, Elon, question on LiDAR. If LiDAR were totally free, would you want to use it in your cars near term? Would that tech significantly help Tesla in the training of your neural network for FSD?
I mean, totally free? Probably not. I think even if it was free, we wouldn't put it on.
Okay. Let's follow up then. Amazon appears to be investing in building an autonomous or electric transport network of some ilk through some organic investments, but also, you know, Zoox, Aurora, Rivian, et cetera. What advice would you give Jeff Bezos in his endeavor?
Well, I don't know how much he cares about this, but I guess he sure is investing a lot of money in it. I mean, I think you obviously need to vote for, if you care about autonomy, you need to focus on vision, because the entire road system is based on passive optical. So you have to solve passive optical for it to have a self-driving system that is a generalized solution. And once you solve passive optical, you've solved self-driving. So why bother with anything else?
Thanks, Elon.
Thank you. Welcome. Let's go to the next question, please.
Our next question will come from Pierre Ferragut with New Street Research. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my question. A very simple one. You haven't talked that much about like the Cybertruck today, and I was wondering how like the ramp of that product is looking like, when we should see the product hitting the road, and how fast you expect to ramp volumes. Can I have a quick follow-up?
Sure. I was in the studio actually on last Friday with Franz and the team, just going over some improvements to the Cybertruck. You know, generally with at Tesla, we really aim to make the car that is delivered better than the car that is unveiled. Because it always drove me crazy. You know, car companies would unveil these awesome-looking cars. And you're like, great, can't wait till I make that. And then the car they actually make is like much worse. And that is just, it's like really disappointing. So, man, we always want to make the car that we deliver be better than the car we unveil. And that's the goal with the Cybertruck. So there's like a lot of small improvements compared to what was unveiled. I think it's going to be better than what we showed. Yeah, it's cool. It's going to be made in Austin, so it's can, you know, dependent on completing that factory. And there are obviously new technologies with the, you know, high hardness, kind of armored exoskeleton. This is, it's never been done before, so there'll probably be some challenges along the way. And obviously something that's extremely high hardness and difficult to scratch or dent is also difficult to form. So there's some manufacturing challenges there. That's why it's so cleaner. Although it also looks good, I think, from a cleaner standpoint. Yeah, if all goes well, we will be able to do some Cybertruck deliveries towards the end of next year. Yeah, so it's difficult to predict. I would say there's probably a lot of deliveries in 22, and some deliveries towards the end of next year, if things go well.
Okay. And now I'm trying to get a sense of how next year is going to look like. So if I look at your production capacity at the end of this year, it's going to be almost 850,000 units on an annualized basis. And you're going to increase capacity in Shanghai, open Berlin. You say today you would open Austin as well. So you're probably going to end the year above a million units. And so am I right thinking next year we should expect you to deliver like somewhere like between 840,000 and 1 million cars during the year?
We'll provide guidance on 2021 after next earnings call.
I mean, it's in that vicinity. Yeah, you're not far off.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Dan Levy with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Thank you. Just wanted to start with a question on the quarter. Zach, maybe you could give us a sense of where directionally Model Y and China Model 3 gross margin was in the quarter relative to Fremont Model 3. And then just a little more color on the gross margin in the quarter. Was this just purely a function of higher volume, or was there also FSD revenues? Just puts and takes on the gross margin in the quarter.
Sure. On your question about FSD, there was a small amount of deferred revenue released. It's not particularly material in the $10 million range for the quarter. With respect to product margins, what we're seeing across the board is just continued reduction in cost, really across every product. Shanghai continues to make good progress there. Model Y cost is also coming down quite quickly as we ramp that, but we've guided in the past that Model Y cost should be roughly equivalent to the Model 3 built-in Fremont cost. It's not quite there, and it's also a bit of a moving target. As Model 3 Fremont cost comes down, Model Y also has to come down with that. But we're generally seeing strength in Shanghai margins, strength in Model Y margins, and not too far off of it, we're seeing strength in Model 3 Fremont and SNX margins. So overall for the quarter, I think it was quite a good story for the products.
Great, thanks. And then just as a follow-up, wanted to ask about your strategy in Europe. And I think your strategy generally has been, you cut costs, so that allows you to cut price and you can generate the extra volume. And I think that's, what we're seeing in China, and the use of LFP, that's a good example. So once you ramp in Berlin, what's a reasonable expectation of what pricing might look like in Europe? And, how flexible are you going to be on pricing, to generate incremental reg credits? So, margins out of the gate that are a little low, but, that are then used for the reg credits that, help to offset that.
Yeah, but what I think I would say generally to the question is, we've been in a position for some time now where we are prioritizing where in the world we send our production. And, there's different factors to that depending upon when different product changes are made, what the logistics routing looks like, different things going on in different markets. But we are in a position where we need to prioritize. What we're trying to do as fast as we possibly can is get production up higher so that we're not in a position of needing to prioritize again. I think that gets at the sentiment of your question.
Okay, let's go to the next question, please.
Our next question will come from Gene Munster with Loop Ventures. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Question on the semi. Elon, if you could just walk us through the development of mega chargers, platooning, and maybe just how you think about autonomy for Tesla Semi and what its how you envision it impacting the broader trucking industry beyond just EV.
Well, actually, Jerome, do you want to ask that?
Yeah, we continue the development of the semi, and in particular, mega chargers. We realize that the 350 kilowatt or so that we might be looking for cars is not going to be enough for semi. So we're looking for something much more powerful than that, that can achieve essentially charging as fast the semi as you during a break, during your driving time, so that you can drive until the next break. Yeah. So there is no usable or efficient time wasted for charging the semi. That's the goal. We're working with other parties to make sure that there is a standard infrastructure that will be able to be deployed for all customers. Yeah, that's probably all I can say at this point. Yeah. We're not working in isolation. Yeah, we have to invent it because it doesn't exist, you know, but we're trying to invent something that could be helpful for everybody.
Yeah, just a note on the sort of semi. The semi does consume a lot of cells, so it's four to six times more than a passenger vehicle. Maybe call five, five-ish times. So if we are cell constrained, it's difficult to ramp up the semi because there's no cells. So we need to solve the cell constraint before ramping semi to significant volume. That's the only real constraint on semi progress. We found over and over again, we just kept running into cell production limitations. And then we're just taking things out of one pocket and putting them in another. We just need more cells so that we can do more stationary storage, more vehicles, more vehicle lines, my truck. Yeah, we need more cells. So
makes sense. Question, just as you think about, you've talked about robotaxi and how you think that's going to impact kind of humans moving around. How do you think about semi impacting freight longer term? I mean, is this something that is nice to have and a complement to all of your tech getting in new markets, or do you think that this could be a material business?
I think it's very material, for sure. I mean, really long term, all transport will go autonomous. Yeah, horses are already autonomous. but all transport will go autonomous. So including semis. So it'll be pretty significant.
And the technology that we're putting in semi is identical to what we're putting in the other vehicles.
Yeah, it's just bigger and more motors.
Thank you. Let's go to the
Our next question will come from Ben Callow with Baird. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. Hey, Elon, what do you think the biggest structural issue is with the, let's call it old school OEMs, or one or two of the structural issues for them not getting their act together and catching up with you? You mentioned what we want the world to look like ahead of us. What do you envision that? Is it like just Tesla or Tesla and Rivian or what? Thanks.
Well, I do think there will be other car companies. I don't think we're going to be the only one. The thing is that what other car companies do, even in the auto segment, is quite a small subset of what Tesla does. So, Tesla, we design and build. We're very vertically integrated. So we're designing and building so much of the car, so much more of the car than other OEMs, who will largely go to the traditional supply base and, like I call it, catalog engineering. It's not very adventurous, and it basically ends up like all the products end up looking the same because they're going to the same suppliers. So, I mean, to the degree that you inherit legacy components, you inherit the legacy limitations and cost structure, and so you kind of need to make new ingredients, new parts, and then there's no machine to make those parts, so you have to make the machine that makes the parts. So Tesla's like, we might be an order of magnitude more vertically integrated than other car companies. And if we're not now, we certainly will be. And then we also have to create, like I said, our sales and service and distribution system in, I don't know, something on the order of 40 countries. Some point it'll be over 100 countries, whereas the other car companies do not own their sales and service and distribution. So, they kind of, assemble parts from a supply base and then hand them to a dealer base. So it's like comparing Tesla to a car company is like just comparing just really one facet or dimension of Tesla. We're like maybe 10% in common with other car companies.
Thank you. Let's go to the last question, please.
And our final question today will come from Philippe Houchois with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my questions. I've got two. The first one for me is try to understand your business model for stationary storage. Have your thoughts on it? I mean, there are two broad directions for me. One is selling hardware, which is a bit of a cost-plus business. And I'm just wondering if there's an opportunity where Tesla could actually share into the savings that utilities in particular could be able to achieve in, like, grid stabilization. The information I was able to get on your business in Australia a few years ago suggests that, given the savings that are achieved, your hardware could have been sold at a higher price. I'm just wondering if you have you can share views on where the business model is going.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. RJ and Zach, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, we're already seeing this in Australia, where we're seeing behind-the-meter aggregation that is providing grid services back to the grid, which effectively reduces the price to the customer and reduces the prices for the grid operator. So you're seeing this trend happening across the globe. And it's going to be at the residential level as well as the wholesale level. So, Megapack on one end and then Powerwall on the other side. Those two working together in tandem, and the software layer on top of it, AutoBidder being that really is going to help make the grid more efficient using the hardware platform and software together.
And just a point of clarification, like that, the large battery power plant in Australia, like we continue to operate that power plant and generate revenue in the market. So whether we could have sold it for more or less, like we're continuing to make money off of that power plant.
Right. Okay, thank you. And the follow-up question I had was, during the battery day, you talked about this cell vehicle integration approach, which is very interesting. And when I think about it, it looks like this means that the skateboard design that Tesla pioneered and many of your followers are using is going to become obsolete. Or am I not thinking about it the right way?
It will be obsolete long term, yes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yes.
Long term, are we talking?
I mean, several years from now. It's not like existing cars stop having value. It's just that if you have a structural pack where the pack is contributing structural value to the car. Because of like the sort of like the composite honeycomb effect of shear transfer between an upper and lower plate, then anything that doesn't do that is going to have to have duplicate hardware. It's going to weigh more. It's going to cost more. And then the same goes for the front and rear castings. We're trying to make the car like you'd make a toy. If you had a toy model car, how would and then it's got to be real cheap and look great. How would you make that? You would cast it. That's how it's done. It would be absurd to make it up of tiny little pieces of stamped metal joined in complex ways. So it's sort of a natural thing to do. And then the same goes for using the energy storage. the battery as a structure, which is done for aircraft wings and for rockets. The early rockets and aircraft, they had a separate aeroshell from the propellant tanks or fuel tanks, and then they realized that doesn't make sense, and you got to integrate. You got to have your fuel tank in wing shape, or you got to have your propellant tanks in the shape of the body of the rocket, for example. You don't want to put a box on a box, basically. Which over many years made it like basically uncompetitive to have an aircraft that has separate fuel tanks from the wing. The wings need to be fuel tanks. But like, I wouldn't think of this as like it's like an overnight transition. It's several years. But then, like I said, over time, it won't be competitive to have a different architecture, in my opinion.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, this is all the time we have for the Q&A today. Appreciate all your great questions, and we'll speak to you again in about 3 months. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right, thank you.
Ladies.
All right. So that's the end of the conference call, and we'll go ahead and shut that off. And I just wanted to go ahead and share a few kind of random thoughts as I was listening to the call. There's quite a few people still online, so I wanted to go through a few points. I'll probably make a separate video kind of highlighting it more specifically and more in detail. But overall, I thought the conference call went very well. Elon Musk was very confident about Tesla's long-term future. He answered the questions very well. He got his team involved. As an investor, I'm very happy with how Elon and his team handled the conference call. I also was actually quite impressed by a lot of the questions. I think a lot of people are thinking long-term and into new product areas and Tesla's execution. Back in the day, like, 2013 to 2017, 18, like every conference call seemed like people were so focused on these minute quarterly like details and numbers. Like, what about this charge, or why was this happening, or just so short-term focused. And I think part of it was there was this fear that Tesla wasn't going to make it, right? And these analysts were all trying to like get some minute detail. But however, I think times have changed, and Tesla's in a different place right now. And you see that by the mood and sentiment of investors. They're looking out further. There's not a lot of like very skeptical or antagonistic questions anymore in the earnings call. First off, though, I thought the comment that Elon said that long term that Tesla's competitive advantage would be manufacturing. Now, he's said that before, and he starts off the call with that. I think that points to the fact that he thinks actually that's a huge thing. Like, he's had a recent insight that the future of Tesla and the future of Tesla's competitive advantage long term is going to be manufacturing. And he says it's counterintuitive. So it means that he's had some type of, realization. I think a lot of people might think, hey, no, Tesla's competitive advantage will be autonomy, right? Software. But recently Elon actually said, hey, there will be other companies that solve autonomy. So while autonomy will give a short term kind of advantage for Tesla to set up robotaxi network, etc., seems like long-term, Elon is not counting on autonomy or software to be the core competitive advantage for Tesla. Now, other people might say, hey, it's battery tech, right? Tesla is driving down the cost of batteries, and they'll continue to do so, and that's the core advantage of Tesla. I mean, that's not too far off from manufacturing, because, you've got to manufacture these battery cells, right, to bring down costs. But later on in the call, Elon points out this thing that, hey, we make the machine that makes the machine that makes the machine, or something along those lines. And he was saying like other car manufacturers need to go to basically a catalog, and they need to look through the different types of machines that are available and pick one of those machines. Elon says they have a different approach, where if they need to get something done and there isn't a machine, then they will make the machine to get the thing done. And he says that this is a very unique thing that Tesla is doing. Pair that together with Tesla's vertical integration, where they are, tackling the whole chain of, manufacturing from raw materials of the batteries even, and the car. So they get steel, right? And they're making aluminum, they're making the batteries, they're getting raw materials, lithium and nickel and all this stuff for the batteries, and they're making the batteries, right? And from Elon's mind, first principle thinking, if he can get raw materials and somehow output them, right, as vehicles and energy and et cetera, at the lowest cost, right, in the most efficient manner, ultimately, right, Tesla wins, or Tesla, that's the Tesla competitive advantage. It's a very physics kind of first principle type of way of thinking. And when Elon analyzes this, my opinion, he says, you know, the way to do that is we need to make every step along the way the most efficient possible. So when we take the raw materials, whether it be for batteries or cars, we need to quickly and most efficiently transform that into parts in the next process. That's why, for example, the Model Y casting machine makes sense. It's like, yeah, you get, you know, aluminum or you get whatever, steel, and you basically cast this in the biggest parts possible in the quickest way imaginable. And that starts to add up. Now, if you do this across the board for every single kind of part and every single process in batteries and vehicles, meaning if you have this idea, we're going to take raw materials and through innovation in machining and making these things, we're going to, in the most efficient manner, right, make these parts and make the car overall. There isn't a single like automaker that can compete with that strategy. And the reason is a few things. First off, no auto manufacturer is going to be that ambitious. It's just completely ridiculous. They don't have the mission. They don't have the urgency that Tesla has, right? Tesla is thinking, hey, time is running out. The world, you know, is at risk. No other auto company has that type of mission. Second, no other auto company is as vertically integrated as Tesla is. Like, no one is trying to own like everything, right? And innovate like Tesla. It doesn't make sense. It makes a lot more sense for manufacturers, auto manufacturers, to depend on a robust supply chain and not be as vertically integrated. It's far less complex. And the third thing is, these auto manufacturers, they're not necessarily large machinery makers, right? They are assemblers. That's their kind of area of expertise. They assemble parts, right? And most of these parts, these auto companies don't even make, right? They're a big operations of a company where they're just pulling together all these parts and assembling these parts. That's the modern kind of car company. What Tesla has done in the past 10 years is has completely redefined what a car company is. And they're getting down into the nitty-gritty where they're making machines that make the parts, and they are going into the forefront of becoming probably one of the best machine-making companies in the world. And this isn't forefront because Tesla isn't necessarily selling their machines. So a lot of people don't really catch this, that Tesla is becoming the best, right, machine making company in the world. But it's obvious that this is happening because, you know, with Tesla's acquisition of Grohmann, and then they have Hybar and other companies, Tesla is building some of the best expertise and pushing these engineers to the limit where they're really driving down the inefficiencies in the car manufacturing process. So what does this all mean? What this means is that Tesla going forward is kind of like a ruthless focused company that's going to, I think, get more and more into machine making, more and more into making the parts, more and more into making every single thing as efficient, as cheap as possible. And the conglomeration of all of these processes put together will make Tesla into a company that is very difficult to emulate. I mean, it's very difficult to compete with, especially as Tesla gets more scale, because as they grow in revenue, all of that cash flow gets implemented or gets reinvested into more innovation and their machines, and the process gets better and better. How does a new startup, how does an existing car company compete with this? It's just tough to do so. And I think that's one of the reasons why Elon Musk comes across during this conference call as very confident. He says there's never been a time where he's been more confident in the future of Tesla than now. And it's because all of these pieces are coming together. Now, the second thing, number two, kind of interesting point I noticed was he talked about how Tesla is a conglomeration of startups. And I thought this was a great question. It was actually by a friend of mine named Emmett. I hope to actually interview him on my channel soon. But the idea is, you know, Tesla is not a normal kind of company. This is a very innovative company that has so many branches and divisions of separate type of companies working on things. And to hear Elon kind of and his thought process of breaking down each level of innovation, each category of innovation, and what each division of Tesla does and how it really is a separate company, right? Each of these divisions. And when you pull them together, they all provide a type of synergy and they work off of each other. For example, Tesla, when you take just one of these divisions, let's say supercharging, right? Or their battery cell division, or let's say auto manufacturer or autonomy, any one of these divisions by themselves actually could be actually quite large businesses, right? They could supply the entire auto industry, hypothetically. They could be multi, you know, billion dollar companies with their own public stock trading, et cetera. However, the advantage of having all of these under one roof is that with someone like Elon Musk at the helm pushing the speed of innovation as quick as possible, these separate divisions all start to work off of each other and they start to share their experiences and they start to like share their innovations and their technologies. For example, like when Tesla gets into a new vehicle field, like they have all the experience of all of their engineering in the past. Therefore, like the Tesla Semi, they're not reinventing the wheel. The Tesla Semi is actually an easier product to do than a typical passenger car because there's less safety requirements from the government. So Tesla's sticking in, like, you know, their existing screens, their existing software, sticking in their existing seats, probably putting in Model 3 motors or, you know, a bunch of battery packs that they already have. And it's actually, you know, like what other company can do what Tesla does, right? Just leverage their existing, you know, product line. The third thing I found kind of interesting about this conference call was the whole HVAC question. And Elon was saying, you know, it kind of makes sense if Tesla had a product where it combined energy storage, energy generation, so solar roof, power wall in your house. It linked everything to a home air conditioning system that does air conditioning and heating that can control like each room on and off, that could also like purify your water and can actually purify your air at the same time, like with a HEPA filtration system. And when I think about this, I'm thinking, you know, what is Elon describing here? He's describing like almost the whole house, you know? I mean, you're talking about the roof, you're talking about like the electrical system in a sense with, you know, providing energy. You're talking about air conditioning and heating, right? You're talking about purifying the water, purifying the air, et cetera. I mean, there aren't a ton of things left. I mean, sure, you've got drywall and framing and foundation, et cetera. Of course, you've got the sewer system, et cetera. But in some ways, it's like Tesla, if I don't know if they want to, but if they go into refrigerators and washer dryer and dishwasher, et cetera, it's like you have a Tesla home, you know, like literally your entire house is Tesla. And I'm not sure if Tesla really wants to go in that route per se, because they need to focus on things that really move the needle. They need to focus on ways that can really speed up the world transition to sustainable energy. So they will go for the biggest bang. And I'm not sure washer dryer is the biggest bang. Maybe dryers actually, who knows? I mean, but it's interesting to think about all this. And it's interesting that Elon is saying that they don't have a prototype yet. And what that means is it's in Elon's head, basically. They don't really have a team of engineers working on it yet. And it's amazing how many products and how many ideas are going through Elon's head, you know? There will be a time when Elon thinks, hey, we've got some, you know, more room. I think the time is right. He will assign a team of engineers, like some of his best engineers, he will assign someone to manage that group. It'll probably start out as probably a pretty modest team, you know, maybe 10, 20 engineers or so. And they'll be tasked with developing this prototype of a whole home system. And from that, Elon will contribute his feedback and will push this team very, very hard. He will go at it with first principles and with design principles that really get to the heart of giving, the consumer a super high value proposition, right? You're not going to switch over from your current home HVAC system and everything into this whole new system unless it's like a no-brainer, unless it's way better than anything else out there. And so Elon's going to push the team. They're going to iterate like crazy. So you're going to have like, you know, maybe 6 to 12 months of this team of engineers just going crazy, iterating, making all these improvements, bringing it to Elon, et cetera. And then when Elon thinks that they've got something interesting, they're going to actually start prototyping it and actually making, you know, the physical product. Elon will push them to make it look good, feel good, like value, give tremendous value, et cetera. And after probably another 6 or 12 months of that, if the time is right where Elon thinks that, hey, we've got a really good, solid first product here, then we might be looking at a product reveal. And that the product reveal will have this, you know, whole thing of the whole, you know, Tesla home system connected to HVAC and air purifier and water purifier connected to your power wall, et cetera. And with that, you have a start of an entire new business line of Tesla. And now the engineering team will grow as they need to actually manufacture this and you know, bring it to fruition. And the first few years might be kind of rough, you know, because it's like, this is a new product, right? New technologies, et cetera. They're just learning. And people might be skeptical or critical of the whole process. But Elon knows that he's got a good thing, a good seed of a product, a good idea. And it's up to his engineering and the vision of the company to iterate on this product. And over time, this can grow into a very significant business. This is kind of the path forward for a new business like Tesla HVAC. And it's one of the inherent kind of carriers of value in Tesla as a company, meaning they have a lot of possibility of new startups coming out of their company. And you've got this amazing person of Elon Musk who understands how to innovate, how to motivate, how to push people in a direction, how to make things come to fruition. And that's kind of the intangible value of Tesla. That's hard to put on a spreadsheet, right? If you're going to try to model something off of that, how do you model the value that Elon Musk brings to Tesla? It's kind of intangible. And that's why I think in some ways, those who bet on Elon long-term, like let's say at a decade level or a double decade level, they likely will be very rewarded. I mean, there are risks, of course, because no human is infallible. No human lives forever, etc. But I think overall, that's a very interesting kind of investment proposition to make. Investing in a person who has proven himself to be an amazing entrepreneur and innovator, but is just kind of in the prime. You know, he's just kind of, in my opinion, it's still the early days of Elon and his, you know, path of innovation. And to see what will come out of that is really remarkable. And I think a large part of that innovation and the experiments and the inventions that Elon has will come out of Tesla. And of course, there's SpaceX, and I think SpaceX is another amazing, interesting, you know, company. But I think in terms of terrestrial transportation, right, all forms of transportation on Earth, right, with the exception of rockets, as they move toward going electric, that's where Tesla's innovation is going to shine. As the world moves to sustainable energy, that's where Tesla's innovation is going to shine. And yeah, I think those, at least that's how I feel. I feel my personal investments in Tesla, you know, since like 2012, going forward, I'm very, you know, at peace with them just because it feels like this isn't the later stages of Tesla, right? We're still in the early stages of what Tesla can be and also how Elon can lead the company. A third or fourth thing that stuck out is Elon's mention of how the way to make a product stick out and how to make a product like really compelling is to ask the question, what kind of future do you want? I thought that was an interesting kind of point of view. And he's mentioned this before in other times, but he kind of gets at the crux of why Tesla's products shine, why Tesla's products really stand out in terms of quality, performance, just the feel. You feel like in a Tesla product, there's a lot of care, right? And a lot of attention to detail. You feel like you are on the cutting edge, right? Of product and technology. And the reason is it's birthed out of a paradigm. It's birthed out of a philosophy. And the philosophy is not being satisfied with the status quo, not being limited by the limitations of the status quo, but rather rethinking, putting yourself outside of the box and imagining the future for what it should be and what you want the future to be, and then coming back to reality and breaking through the status quo challenges. Like, that's the whole context. That's the whole strategy that Tesla employs. And this is actually really, really difficult to do because it's not easy, right? The easier thing to do is to take what's possible, to take what's achievable, to take the current situation, the status quo, make the best thing you can, and to compete with other companies, right? And to try to be the most competitive company out there. For Tesla, they're playing a different game. You know, they're not trying to be the best auto company. They're not trying to compete with Toyota and Honda and Porsche and whatever, Audi, whatever. They're not trying to play within the realm of the limitations of the status quo and make money and be a great company. Tesla is pulling themselves out and they're saying, what are the biggest problems our society, what are the biggest problems that humanity faces? And in light of those problems, what kind of future do we want? Like, are we happy with the course of direction that the future of humanity is headed toward? And if we're not happy about that, what direction do we want humanity to head? And can we make that happen? Like, can our company contribute to altering the course of society and humanity? Like, tell me, like, how many companies are really thinking on that type of level? It's like part, like, philosophical, part like historical, you know, like future thinking, but it's got this very tangible practicalness to it, where after describing and actually grabbing, you know, making sense of the future that we want a future of sustainable energy. We want a future of clean air, right? We want a future where our climate is more stable and our earth is more healthy. With that, Tesla brings it down and says, okay, now the path forward to do that is we've got to, you know, move to sustainable energy. What can we do about it? And that's the mission in the context of Tesla and why they're doing what they're doing and how they come up with the products that they come up with. Tesla's not just trying to make a great car company. They're just not trying to, like, you know, beat out Toyota as the largest or most valuable car company in the world. That would be a failure in Tesla's overall mission if they didn't significantly, right, move the needle to transition the world to sustainable energy. Yeah, some of this stuff is really interesting. Yeah, I could go on, you know, for a very, very long time. I feel like I can go on for hours, especially after hearing like a conference call like this. I'll go ahead and stop here because, I'll probably, you know, need some time for to make a video or two later today or tomorrow about the earnings call and the shareholder letter. But anyways, go ahead and if you haven't subscribed, I encourage you to do so. We're looking at Tesla. We're looking at investment topics, not just Tesla, and the potential out there from different angles. And go ahead, like this video so you get more people to watch it, and we'll see you in my next video. Thanks. Bye.